Welcome to episode 296 of Fly Away. We're a group of agents from Outlander Travel who get together every week to talk about all things travel. Whether you've been listening for a while or are just tuning in, we're happy you found us. We truly believe that travel has the power to change the world, and we want to inspire others to come along with us. We chat about destinations, current events, our favorite experiences, and lots more. We love to hear your feedback and ideas for topics, so be sure to connect with us on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. My name is Sandy, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents, Elizabeth, Lindsay, Donna, and George. And this week we're excited to welcome to the podcast, Devin Singley. He's the head Devin is the head brewer for Bombshell Brewery in Holly Springs, North Carolina. He's a commercial brewer with a passion for all things Disney and beer history. He's been brewing beer professionally for 10 years, and prior to that, he was a librarian, so you can
see
what attracted him to this podcast.
That was just me.
And as a librarian, Devin studied and wrote about the history of beer. Recently, when I was visiting Bombshell, I was telling Devin how excited I was to find locally a beer that I normally enjoy in Epcot. And not only was he familiar with it, but he knew the backstory of how that particular beer got to Epcot. And it made me wonder, what else could Devin tell us? And it turns out it's quite a bit. So let's get started. Yeah. So I found out when I was talking to you that I was pronouncing it wrong. The beer from Germany.
Schaffelhofer?
Yeah.
That was... Oh, yeah. That sounds way better than what you were saying.
Like, I want a Schaffelhofer, please.
I have discovered, being married to a German citizen, you can fake a lot of German. You know, you just make a really hard sound. You can fake.
Like you're clearing your throat?
Oh, yeah.
So say it again.
The trick is to say it with confidence.
It's the sound, the umlaut.
So how did they tell the story? Because I think this is such a cool story about this beer.
Schaffelhofer.
Yes. So this is a brewery that dates back to the 1500s. You know, it's not like they just started up yesterday. And in 2007, they actually introduced the first grapefruit Hefeweizen. And in 2012, they brought this beer, the Schaffelhofer Grapefruit Hefeweizen, to Epcot's Food and Wine Festival. And Epcot was like, hey, we're running out. Someone called Germany. We need some more. And so they had to keep resupplying. And so the folks at Schaffa thought, like, we might want to actually look into the United States market, which they really hadn't explored before. And so that was just in 2012. Today, the United States is their second largest market outside of Germany. And they have more than one style of Hefeweizen that they import to the U.S. now. But it all started with the Food and Wine Festival. It was really a proving ground.
Yeah,
that's so interesting because you see that beer everywhere now. Yeah. Everywhere.
I live on a tiny island in the Pacific Northwest, and I can get it at my little grocery store now.
Yeah.
And I remember being at Epcot when it was running out in 2012, and it was so frustrating because one of my trips, I was especially looking forward to getting it again, and it was gone. It was like the whole time I was there, it was sold out.
Well, and I don't think I heard of it at Epcot. I think that I heard of it outside of Epcot and then went to Epcot and saw it there. So obviously after 2012, because I was late to the craft beer scene. I'm just going to admit that.
And now you'll find it not just at Epcot, but you'll find it almost every single bar. Yes. You'll find it everywhere, Disney Springs, that kind of thing. Almost every one of the quick stops.
Really? You know,
my wife and I love the Polynesian. We have DVC there. And we've also stayed at Saratoga Springs and those places. And, you know, in their little stores, you know, the Artist Palette, Captain Cooks, all that. Just cans of Schaffelhofer.
I didn't notice that either. Gosh. Well, I kind of just noticed this beer probably in the last 2 years is when I started drinking it. So, yeah, I'm really late to that party, I guess.
So, well, and I want to throw a question to you that's sort of more generic before we talk about some of these individual countries. With that in mind, how much do you feel that Disney and Epcot was in front of the craft beer movement and the sort of as the U.S., or how much of it was Epcot following the craft beer movement? Because some people would criticize Disney for just jumping onto a bandwagon sometimes.
Oh, no. So there's a quote of mine that I'm a big fan of, and I don't think Mahatma Gandhi was the first to say this, but it's often attributed to him. There go my people. I must follow them so I may lead them. And I think that applies to a lot of areas of how Disney has set up, because they don't settle for something small. You know, in some of these countries, you know, they've got a mass market beer and something you've heard of before, but they also have something that really fits, something that actually fits the style. And I love the fact that Disney didn't just sort of buy beer off the shelf and call it a day, but they looked for something that really fit the theming of what they were doing and to immerse you in their country.
Nice.
I don't know if I answered the question. I'm sorry.
No, you did. Absolutely. And I'm actually trying to pull up some of your notes so that I can ask it. So can you give an example of some place where, you know, the first thing that pops into my head is Japan, but I don't know if that qualifies. So that's what I want to look. So we know Japan has Kirin, but what does Japan have in Epcot that isn't Kirin, that isn't the beer that we all know?
Japan is my favorite example. And Japan represents to me the reason why drinking beer in Epcot is a true experience. And this is why something like, you know, I went to Epcot when I was 10. And I was like, all right, cool. And then I went again when I was 35. And I was like, this is amazing. So.
Yes, after you're 21, it takes on a whole other ball.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't believe they let kids in this park. In the Japan Pavilion, they have a beer, and I'm hoping I'm going to pronounce this correctly. I apologize for the hate emails you get if I say this wrong. Kawaido. And that means Little Tokyo. And that's a craft beer brand in China, Japan. And so all the beers from Kawaido represent the seven classical hues of Japanese art. And so they have three brands of beer from this craft brewery in Takumitai. Again, I hope I'm saying that right.
And that's brand new too. So I don't think anybody in this room has been there yet. Is that correct? Yeah.
No, but Japan is one of the leading beer producers now. They actually have a huge stake in the world market now in beer.
There's a lot of prized beer that comes out of Japan these days. One thing that's super cool, so you have Takumitai, and they have rooms that are based on the elements of Japanese things. So you've got a stone room, you have a water room, you have a paper room. And then you pair that with a beer that's named for things like the classical hues. So they have an India Pale Lager there that's called Kayana. I hope I'm saying that right. And that is actually a Japanese word that means deep golden brown. And it's beautiful that they can express, you know, deep golden brown in one word. So they didn't just say, let's have Sapporo, let's have Asahi, and just call it a day. They went through the effort of saying this really encapsulates the experience of Takumitai, and they only have it at one spot. I mean, there's three restaurants in the Japan Pavilion, and I don't even know how many restaurants in all of Epcot, and they just tailored it to one.
So let's talk a little bit about another area that we would expect to see really craft beer at this point, which is the America Pavilion.
Yeah.
And I'm just Sandy's favorite, Hops. Can you talk a little bit about that beer and the history of it and why we're laughing?
That was a special moment for me. Last year during the Food and Wine Festival, I completed my 2019 drink around the world, the America Pavilion, when they had the Eat to the Beat. And I didn't plan this on purpose, but it was pretty awesome. They had the band Smash Mouth playing. And so they're playing All Star, because that's the song people know, as I finished my drink around the world. But what they had was a beer called Hops, and it's from the band Hanson. And so that band Hanson, because there's so many bands named Hanson. Mm-hmm. And that boggles my mind. That's, again, one of the things that makes beer in Epcot so unbelievably special, is that that beer is available in Oklahoma and one bar and one cart with one tap in Orlando, Florida. So part of what boggles my mind about how they can make that work is the laws of distribution. So in North Carolina, you would have to sell your beer to a distributor. And if we sell our beer to a distributor, we can't tell them only one beer can go to one restaurant. If we sell two kegs to a distributor, by law, that distributor has to make a good faith effort to sell those two kegs to two different accounts. And if you think about it, Disney has to buy this beer from Tulsa. And my guess is they are paying cold freight shipping from Tulsa, Oklahoma to Orlando to stock it with literally over 160 other beers that they have for this event and just have it in one spot. The logistics of what they're doing, they have to set up with a beer wholesaler to receive it because Disney is the retailer. They can't actually bring the beer in. So all the moving pieces that they have to work through and provide some Disney magic to be able to have it exclusively at one bar is mind-boggling.
And on top of that, the state has to approve it all.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And Florida is not the easiest state to deal
with. No, it's not.
I have a feeling Disney has a little pull.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
A little bit. I thought, though, I could have sworn they gave it to me in a can when I was down there last year. I wonder if they
ran out.
Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly where you're talking about, though, where that that one booth is in the American Pavilion. And then normally they have Sam Adams there, too, and they'll do some kind of, like, they usually have, like, the Sam Adams seasonal there, you know, at the same time.
Devin, do you know anything about the maple bacon stout from Shipyard?
I actually don't. Are you going to take me to school?
No, it's one of my favorite beers I've ever had at Epcot, and they only seem to have it during the Flower and Garden Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the fact that it's made by Shipyard Brewing, and no matter what I do, if I offer to sell a kidney, I cannot get it here in Washington because of distribution.
So you're saying you've offered to sell a kidney for it?
Well, I would. It's that good.
That must be one
really
fine.
It is one fine beer.
In Washington, you're in Washington State, right?
Yeah. It's got a 90% score on the Beer Advocate. I mean,
you tried Voodoo Donut from Rogue? Based on, obviously, the donut restaurant in Portland, Oregon. And that's a maple bacon beer, I believe. Comes in a pink bottle.
It's really terrible. Have you had it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's terrible. You're a bad person. You know it's terrible.
Still?
No, it's terrible. Don't, okay.
She said maple bacon. So.
If she said, I love Chef Art Smith, I really want some fried chicken. I was so bad.
I have funny stories about that, but we won't talk about them here. Because I did have a bottle, that pink bottle in my refrigerator almost a decade, because everybody was afraid to try it. And
well, that might be why it tasted bad.
That might be why it was bad. Here's this beer for 10 years.
It wasn't that long, and it was bad, and it turned out to be bad. And anyway, let's get back to Epcot. I do think that that's interesting, though, because that's another beer where, like, you haven't even heard of it, Devin, and it's you can only seem to get it at Epcot.
It's only one cart.
People think of Disney as mass market, but it's sort of interesting how they've sort of brought in this craft market and really made it unique.
Yeah, they do have certain tie-ins. Without getting too deep into the beer, who owns who kind of a thing. Actually, a significant amount of beers that are available at Epcot are brands that are produced either directly or under license by Heineken. And some of the brands have a reverse kind of thing. For instance, in the Morocco Pavilion, you get Casablanca, which is the very first Moroccan beer. And the original Moroccan beer dates all the way back to 1996. And at the brewery in Morocco, they produce Stella Artois and Heineken under license there. It's interesting, they also have in the Morocco Pavilion, you know, beer from Lebanon and beer from Turkey, which is a lot more common to find. But I just, again, appreciate that Disney took the time to say, surely there's beer in Morocco.
We got to find one.
I know. I remember
one
of my friends remarking, like, how are we drinking in Morocco? Because she didn't think we'd find alcohol in that specific pavilion, so... Yeah, I don't ever stop and drink it, though. Is it any good? Did you try it?
I have. So if you're familiar with French beer, it's a very French style beer.
Very light.
French really wanted beer in Morocco. And so originally it was brewed just for export because the French holdings in Morocco. But they are lenient enough in their political and religious system. I don't want to talk about things I don't know what about. I'm just going to say everything's cool in Morocco.
Actually, it's pretty hot there. But so, so I'm looking at your notes on China, and this is, I think, the other cool thing about so the beer that you've pulled out for China isn't made by some little craft brewery, right?
Yeah.
It's so talk a little bit about that one. Yeah. Yeah.
So Tsingtao is the first commercial brewery from China, and they started in about 1903. And so Germany had a port in the town that is today or at the time was called Tsingtao. Now it's called Qingdao for the Qing dynasty. And so for 16 years leading up to World War I, Germany had a port there. And so the Germans, like they do, set up a brewery, and they taught the Chinese how to make beer their way. So by the time 1914 rolled around, they had Chinese brewmasters that sort of kept things going. And they continued to make this beer, Tsingtao, to their taste, but they also made new Chinese beers. And it's made with hops that are grown only in China. They don't export those hops. It's made with grain mostly from China. And so it really is an interesting terroir beer. Terroir is a French word that means land taste, just in case you're ever on Jeopardy and that comes up.
I took ice cold French. I'm good.
Excellent.
So you listed it as rice lager.
Yes.
It's good. Is it? Did you like it?
Yeah. So that is the Jasmine draft that they have for the Epcot Food and Wine Festival, and rice is a common ingredient in a lot of Asian beers, it really gives a drier taste. Also, in many Asian countries, since rice is so plentiful, it's a pretty easy ingredient to just sort of start out with. So it's crisp, it has great tea-like flavors, it's excellent drinking, especially in the Orlando weather. And it has these interesting little nods to history. You know, to me, it's always really fascinating to learn about beer, but also like where it comes from. You know, I also like to play guitar and things like that. So if you have an Epiphone guitar, all Epiphone guitars are made in Qingdao, which used to be Tsingtao, which used to be a German port. And there we have China's first brewery.
Everything pulls together.
That's right.
So
it's a circle.
To clarify, I mean, and we could actually just jump ahead to the UK here, but the, you know, the famous thing about Guinness is that it's never as good as it is in Ireland because it's brewed elsewhere. And I'm just going to jump on that bandwagon because I've tried in several cases. So these beers that they're bringing in, like when I drink a beer in the China Pavilion, is it coming over from China or is it being brewed in like the Everglades somewhere?
So that is an excellent question. And there is a tremendous amount of beer that's sold as imported in the United States that's brewed in British Columbia, Canada, because then it's still imported to the United States. And so you have these very large brewery operations like Heineken, that kind of, that produce things, and they produce them under license, that sort, brought into the United States. The Chinese beer, I don't have any special inside knowledge, so I would assume it's made in China, but also I don't know.
So you're saying it's possible that it's being brewed elsewhere?
Yeah, it is most certainly possible. Now, Jasmine Draft being so special, I could see that being something specially made in China, whereas maybe regular Tsingtao is made in British Columbia.
That makes sense. It's a legit question because I think that a lot of times we think we're getting a beer from somewhere and it's really not.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like you mentioned Guinness. I mean, there's a Guinness brewery in Maryland, you know. There's a most Yingling that you get in our area is made actually in Tampa Bay. And there's a time that
I'm driven right past there.
Yeah. Almost all Sam Adams is made at like 22 different contract facilities. So almost all the Sam Adams you would get like in the Southeast was actually made in Eden, North Carolina at the Miller Coors Brewery, which is also where every drop of Blue Moon that you drink comes from outside of Coors Field in Colorado.
Amazing. It's like Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like Sierra Nevada is brewed in North Carolina now.
Well, yeah. But yeah, but you at least know that those breweries exist. I think that's the thing, is it's often hidden. You know, you don't right. know that there's a Sam Adams brewery in Eden. You know that there's a Sierra Nevada. And
well, and wasn't there like a big, I mean, isn't this kind of controversial that people don't realize that what they think, when they think they're drinking a microbrew, it's actually something that's like, been bought up by a large
by AB InBev. Yes.
There's actually been interesting, really a lot of interesting lawsuits about this. Actually, Blue Moon is you know, made by Miller Coors. I think it's pretty open secret now, but at the time, it was the first beer to be sued by country. Belgium sued Coors back starting in like 1999. Because they put Belgian white on the label, and eventually they changed it to Belgian style white.
Oh.
So there's a lot of these things. What's in what's called mock premium, which is one of the big three makers, Bud Miller Coors, when they make something to compete in the craft market, that's called mock premium.
Interesting.
It's like champagne. You call it champagne, right. But you're not allowed to unless it's right. actually from the Champagne region.
Yeah.
So, okay. So you have Innocent Gun on your UK yes. list, which I was expecting something else, but it was Innocent Gun and I'm excited because it's so good. So talk about it a little bit.
Oh my God. I love Innocent Gun.
So good.
So when I went last September, the Ireland Pavilion was out of Guinness. Like we went up and I was like, I want some Guinness. And they were like, got none. And I couldn't decide if that was the most Irish or the least Irish thing I've ever seen in my life.
That's a fair question, yeah. actually.
So so right there in the UK area, they have this beer that's simply called Innocent Gun Original. Innocent Gun is a Scottish craft brewery that barrel ages all of their beer. And barrel aging is fantastic. You have unique flavors. You have these flavors of... you know, vanilla, you have flavors of wood, you get different levels of char. It's a smooth character. If it's a barrel that had a spirit beforehand, you have a little bit of residual alcohol pickup that actually helps thin out the body and make things incredibly smooth. These flavors are absolutely fantastic. And this is the kind of thing where you might find Innocent Gun in a grocery store near you, but it is going to cost you, you know, $20 a four pack. Yep. And this is something that's super special to have there.
Yeah. I tracked it down to our Total Wine and More here, and it's more like $17 for a bottle.
Oh, ridiculous. Yeah.
But the stock,
which barrel, totally justifies Epcot.
Yeah. It totally does. But
Epcot's the cheapest place to drink.
Yes. I got hooked on it when they only had it during Food and Wine Festival. So that's another great story of how it transitioned, because it was not in Rose and Crown until recently, because I was waiting a whole year just to be able to get it. And then it's another one like the, I'm going to say it wrong, the Schafhofer. the Hefeweizen that runs out, it would run out and then it was done. And then they put the little sign up and you'd been standing in the whole line and you get up to the front and you're like, that's all I wanted from Scotland was the Innocent Gun. And then they brought it into the pavilion. So I was really happy the first time I saw it. And they do have both, right? They don't just have the plain. They've got the Scotch. Is it the Scotch? I think it's the Scotch Arrow.
Yeah.
I don't think they like plain. I think they like original.
Yes.
Not plain.
Yeah, you can get Innocent Gun plain.
So, normal.
Those are my favorite beer terminology things. Scotch beer has different names based on its alcohol content, because beer has historically been taxed based on its alcohol content, especially in Europe. A lower alcohol beer from Scotland that might be like, you know, 5.5-6% is Scotch-ish. And then you get over 7 and something like that, it's Scotch. sort of a fun thing. If you like a malty beer, Scotch ale is perfect because hops don't grow very well in Scotland. Scotland is really at the end of where hops will grow. And they didn't want to buy hops from England, which is where hops would grow. And so Scottish beers evolved to not be very hoppy. They didn't want to do trade with English. So you have a lot of really great malt flavors that they developed.
Yeah, so Scotland's just like North Carolina. We can't grow hops here either.
You can.
Yes.
So hops grow between the 35th and 55th parallels, and Raleigh is right at 35. But the thing is, you need an explosion of sunlight, and you need just all the water. And that's why the Pacific Northwest works really well, because you had a lot of land that wasn't nearly as populated like the Northeast. And it had the right drainage for water, the right sunlight, all the right items.
I don't know how the hops are getting enough sunlight, but I'm not. There's a little bit of a problem here.
Are you on the south side of your building?
I live on an island.
All right. Let's talk about Canada, because Molson, and then... it's better than that. Let's talk about it. Because Sandy, as you know, is a big fan of Michelob Ultra. And I feel like Sandy goes to Canada and has Molson. Yes. So let's convince Sandy to try something else.
I usually walk past Canada and go straight to the UK and get a
Can I get you to try at least Moosehead?
I mean, I'll try whatever. Yeah, Devin, when we go to Epcot, I will try anything you put in front of me.
I appreciate that. Actually, Moosehead, though, is not available in Epcot, does make a Radler, and it is fantastic. If you can find it, it's somewhat hard to come by. It was on the store shelves here in North Carolina. I don't think it sold very well, so a lot of distributors dropped it. But Moosehead Radler is absolutely
fantastic. Is it as good as a Stiegel Radler or Stiegel?
Yeah.
Bitburger.
Bitburger.
Moosehead is more in line with like a North American taste. So Bitburger and Stiegel are gonna, and also like Schafhofer are like 2.5%, because what they do is they take a regular beer and mix it with basically lemonade, and so you have a 5% beer that becomes 2.5%. Whereas it's more American style, like you would find with Moosehead, to have, you know, a beer that's 8%. And mix it, you know, 30-40% with lemonade, and you have a 5% beer with that same taste.
I grew up with
I was totally going the other direction. I'm like, mix it with Everclear and make it. That's the American way.
You got to make it all the way around. All the
when I was younger, I thought Moosehead was the only beer that was like beer, because that's what my dad had in the refrigerator, was Moosehead in Wisconsin. And I I had it, but it, I mean, when you're a kid and they let you try beer for the first time, you're like, I don't know what you're drinking. It's not water or soda. But I never knew that they made Radler.
Oh, yes. Oh, it's fantastic. If you can get it in cans, I highly recommend.
I see Lindsay took it. Sorry.
So I want to.
Radler equals cans.
Yes. So I don't like Radlers. I don't want you putting fruit in my beer. So I want to talk about what you had on your list here for Canada. And I want to hear how you say it, because I say it French Spanish, which I'm sure is not right. But I say trois pistoles. Is that right?
No.
I didn't think so. It's good, though. And I've had it. Is it trois pistoles?
I think so.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
I took French in high school, and I speak German really well. I'm not going to embarrass myself. I think I've built some cred, and I don't want to.
I think it's trois pistoles. Speak some French,
and everyone's like, "This guy's an idiot." this is actually the highest rated beer in Epcot that you'll find year round. Trois pistoles is French for 3 coins. And I think to an American's eyes, you would see this word, you think 3 pistols. But to me, again, this is something that's really cool. That really ties into the area of Canada. And so it goes back to the folklore of French Canada. And according to this folklore, the priest was asking for help to build a new church. And he conjures the black horse. And the black horse is an incarnation of the devil. And so the black horse is helping him build this church, and the priest removes the bridle, and then the horse vanishes. And so in this folklore, the church is still missing a stone from where the horse vanished before the church was finished being built. And so this beer, which is a Belgian strong dark ale, Belgian style. I don't want to get sued by Belgium. Strong dark ale. And it is the highest class, world class, highest rated beer in Epcot. And if you ever look at the tap handle, it looks sort of like a devil tail, like a sort of serpentine with this, you know, kind of spade ending to it. And if you didn't know the story, you'd be like, well, that's really weird. And even if you know it means three coins, you'd be like, why are you pouring me a devil tail? So there's so many of these intricate nods to history and culture. It just fascinates me.
You just need a librarian to help you figure it all out.
that's pretty much the secret of life right there.
Yeah, right.
But I think the funny thing is so many people walk up to the cart there and they're like, I'll have that one. And they have no idea what they're getting. Like, no idea. Oh. It's hard to find. It's not easy to just pick one up.
And see, I pick by style and the level of hops and bitterness. If the bitterness is too high, then I'm not going to try it anyway. I stick with the lower bitterness and the styles that I like to drink. I don't care who it came from.
We need to get you more bitter. I think we need more. I think I can make that happen.
They still have... All right, so is that how you say it? While we have the expert on, I want to take advantage of... If I've been saying this wrong my whole life.
Sure.
Le Fin du Monde?
Yeah, Le Fin du Monde.
Yeah.
That means the end of the world in French.
Mm-hmm. It is.
That's good.
North Carolina increases alcohol content. I was 21. It was 2005. And so I went to like Total Wine the first week you get something higher than 5.5%. And I bought some Le Fin du Monde. And I had already started calibrating my system to 5% beer. And a 9% beer threw off my calibration.
Yes, I have trouble drinking that one at Epcot when it's hot. Yeah. Because it'll knock you out.
That one has a nice fruit flavor. Mm-hmm. And that one in Ephemere. Ephemere is 5.5%, and it's got really nice apple flavor to it. But yeah, Le Fin du Monde is relatively dry, so it doesn't feel always super refreshing.
It's not refreshing, but it's not super heavy like you would expect. I've come to associate the higher alcohol content with I go darker. I like the darker beers, and then it goes up. You know, you start light, like just like wine tasting. You start.
Yeah, but that doesn't work for something like a Vitus Bock.
Yeah,
that's 11%.
It's one of the ones that throws me for
actually dark malt doesn't have very much sugar. And so if you take something like Guinness, what we'd buy in the United States is only about 3.9%. It's actually incredibly low in calories because there's no sugars to be extracted from the malted barley where you've converted all of the starch to this burnt state. So you actually need a tremendous amount of pale malt to make a beer higher in alcohol. And so generally, the darkest beer you'll ever find is like 5 to 10% maybe dark malt.
So where was that one from you were just asking about, Lindsay?
The Vin du Monde? You can get it in Canada, but you can also get it at the Brown Derby and a bunch of other places.
Okay, so we don't have much time left, but we have two countries that are the kings of beers here. We have Italy and France. Please do tell, because seriously, I would never get a beer at either.
You can't
of these
forget
places.
Norway. Yeah. I'm
sorry, I might have skipped one, but okay. But I've already brought up Italy and France, both of which Italy and France are very much known not for beer. So I'd like for you to talk a little bit about the beers from those places and their merits, so that I'm convinced to have a beer there next time because I generally skip it.
For sure. Italy is interesting because it falls geographically on this line that in the booze industry, we call the grape and grain line, because there's a line where barley grows really well and then where grapes grow really well. And so northern Italy will grow a lot of barley. Southern Italy obviously grows a lot of grain, grapes. Mm-hmm. And so one of the selling points of Birra Moretti, I don't speak Italian, I'm sorry, is it's made with 100% Italian grown barley, but actually a lot of beers are actually made with Italian grown barley. In fact, a lot of the grain that you might buy from a German malt house, many of them is actually just is Italian varieties of barley. It's not just one grain. There's about 9 different varieties of barley, most of which are just interchangeable, but they're grown quite a bit in Northern Italy. So they have a Doppelbock, and Doppelbock is actually this wonderful German term that literally means two goats, but in context, the word Bock means strength, and so a Doppelbock is double the strength. And this was a style of beer that was made for times of fasting, and sometimes called a Lenten beer, because it's what monks would drink during Lent while they couldn't have solid bread past their lips. So a Doppelbock generally is a very strong beer, because Bock is a taxable term in Europe, and it has to do with the sugar content you create in the process of making beer. And La Rosa from Moretti it means the red in Italian. So this beer is sort of reddish in color. It's higher in alcohol. And it's a very nice malt forward beer. And if you're looking for something that you're just not going to find on draft a lot of places, this is a really nice option. It is incredibly rare to find Doppelbock, especially in Florida, on draft.
Good to know.
There you
and
go.
France, what's France's little contribution to the beer world here?
That would be a Kronenbourg. And that is France's.
Oh, and that's good stuff.
That's France's number one seller, especially outside of France. Now, this is something that's really interesting about that. So it's part of the Carlsberg group. And Carlsberg is a Danish beer. And Louis Pasteur worked for Denmark. And that's where he worked when he invented pasteurization, which he probably called meization. Funny joke, Kevin. And
hilarious. That is George will cut all those laughs out. So yeah.
That is also where a lot of laboratory work was done. The pH scale was devised at Carlsberg. It is where the first microscopes powerful enough to see the single-celled organism, which is yeast, and able to define that yeast was what brought about fermentation. Fermentation prior to Pasteur's work was simply all is one word, if you want to Google this later, is God is good, because people just thought it sort of was this divine spark that brought fermentation. And then Louis Pasteur ruined all that for everybody by inventing a microscope. And so Kronenbourg is part of that family, and it's been in existence since 1664, hence Kronenbourg 1664. And it is made with French hops and is the best-selling French beer outside of France.
So basically the French can grow grapes and grow hops is what you're saying.
Yeah. They're right there. Let me point to the map I have behind me. See right here, this line.
So what do they have in Norway that we should be trying? Because I've been informed that Carlsberg is no longer there.
Yeah. So, in the Norway pavilion, there's not actually that much Norwegian beer. So if I had to point you in a direction of something, I would actually point you an Icelandic beer. And the cart that they have there has Einstok. And they have a couple beers there. One is a spice porter, but my favorite is this white ale that they have.
Oh, yeah.
And it is refreshing. It is nice to drink. Man, if you're in Epcot and it's the summer and it's a billion degrees outside, that is exactly what you want.
That's what we were drinking in the frozen line when that ride opened up. Oh.
Well, I remember when they
used to call that beer frozen.
They should call that beer frozen. They were all out.
When they used to sell Carlsberg at that part, I remember somebody telling me that in Norway, I guess, or maybe Denmark, they said that that's like the Bud Light of beers.
Oh, it is, for sure.
Yeah, they made fun of it for liking it.
One might say the Mick Ultra.
I think Mick Ultra is the only Mick Ultra. I don't know that anything else can compare.
Tap water.
All right. So on that note, we should talk about Mexico before we have to wrap up because we are getting to the end.
Yeah. So I guess this means we started in Canada for finishing in Mexico.
Yes. You know the order of things.
I like to start with Mexico because I like to know I'm going to have a good day right off the bat. I like to know. You can't drink all day if you don't start first thing.
That's right.
So this is going to seem, again, very mass market. And this, again, goes sort of behind the scenes that a lot of beers are actually made by larger companies. So Dos Equis is actually a Heineken brand today. For everyone who spoke or took Spanish in elementary school, you know that Dos Equis means two X's. But actually, in this context, it's the original name was Siglo XX, which means century. So it's for 20th century. So this beer dates back to the 1900 when they made a beer specifically for the 20th century. And so most Mexican beers are lagers because there was a German settlement in Mexico that turned out to not be a permanent settlement. If you could picture for me a bottle of Corona in your mind, it's a very Gothic font, right? It's a very German style thing. The Germans saw Oompa band and a Mexican mariachi band are all the same instruments. Those are the exact same way of playing. As the Germans came over, it was a time where Vienna lager was very in vogue. Vienna lager is relatively new. And if you like Oktoberfest as we know it today really is more of a Vienna lager, because like in 1872, somewhere around there, Oktoberfest in Munich ran out of beer and a brewery had to start tapping into one of their other stages. And they had Vienna lager and people were like, this is the jam. And everyone started having Oktoberfest. So if you like Oktoberfest, you can have it year round by drinking Vienna lager.
It really did.
And so Dos Equis is, you know, something you're going to find a lot of places. However, it has a really rich history that kind of ties in the theme of the world. You know, you've got a German style beer that is actually from Vienna, and then it has added corn to it these days. That's a part of when immigrants came over and they couldn't just find the exact same barley that would grow in Germany. So you've got a lot of elements coming together.
That's fascinating. I had no idea about that. That probably explains why I like Dos Equis, because I really do love Vienna lager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's having Oktoberfest.
That's awesome. All right. Well, that is our show for this week. Thank you for hanging out with us. We would love for you to share your life-changing travel moments with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Fly Away or from the podcast page on outlandertravel.com. Please be sure to subscribe to us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. We would love to hear from you. Thank you so much, Devin, for coming on tonight and sharing your
experience.
Yay! That was awesome. On behalf of Donna, Elizabeth, George, Lindsay, and myself, Sandy, thank you for joining us this week. Gotta fly.